Why are police photographing our license plates?
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
Welcome to the Reasonable Voice radio show. I'm your host, Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice. The mission of the Reasonable Voice is to connect the dots between politics and finance, the need for better and more affordable education, our humanity, world peace, and of course, the arts, which we then gladly provide our listeners, the voting public, as informative food for thought to provoke their self-determination and appetite for equal economic opportunity and justice for all without truth decay. The Reasonable Voices are advocates prioritizing education, preserving our history, leading by example for a peaceful and prosperous world by evoking and embracing both creative artists and political unity as solutions to our challenges. Hello, I'm Marcello Rolando, The Reasonable Voice, welcoming you to the Reasonable Voices talk radio show, where Reasonable Voices get to share their experiences, knowledge, information, education, all to make our lives a little richer and better off for it. My guest today is an old friend, Megan Marlette. Hi, by the way, how are you?
I'm very well. How are you, Marcello?
I'm good. It's good to talk to you. We usually only communicate through Facebook, but it's great. Megan, I should tell you a bit about Megan. I've met her in the studio art school at University of Virginia some time ago. She's on the show today as the director of the Big Head Brigade. And I'm going to let her tell you all about that, because there's some exciting things coming up. They've done things all over New York, and they're doing things for Halloween and so forth and so on, and also raising funds. But we'll get into all of that with Megan. Before that, however, Megan, I know you've been on my other radio show, Charlottesville This Week, I believe back in 2012. So it's been a while since we've chatted on the radio. I'd just like to follow up a bit with that. It was Pluto the Cat, and based on Edgar Allan Poe's short story, The Black Cat. Tell us, for those who never heard that story, because it is fascinating, what was, if I'm speaking correctly in the past tense, Pluto the Cat, and what happened to Pluto the Cat, and then we'll move on to the big heads.
So I think Pluto the Cat is probably pretty kind of weathered by now. Mm. He was a big cat on the parking lot of where the old Asian buffet used to be, on the corner of Westfield Road and Route 29. In Charlottesville, me and my students painted a very large cat on that parking lot. Mm-hmm. Now, you can actually see him virtually from Google Earth now.
Uh-huh.
So even though he's faded on the in real space and time on the parking lot, you might be able to see a little bit of him still there. You can actually get online, Google Earth, and put in the coordinates of Route 29 and Westfield Road. And if you do that and start zooming down, you will see Pluto, the one-eyed cat, basically sitting there smiling from, zillions of miles up in the air.
Mm-hmm.
He's there, and you can see him on Google Earth.
And that's fantastic. For those who might not quite get this, we're talking about a huge parking lot on which Megan and Richard Robinson and the Cardboard Collective and other students with her painted this huge black cat that can be seen from outer space. That's what we're saying here. But when you were on Earth, that is, when you walked around the parking lot, as I did, it was made up of a lot of smaller cats, yes, as I recall?
Yes, exactly. It was hundreds of about 4 feet long black cats. with a couple of people in there, like the axe murderer from the from the story.
Yes.
And the teeth of the cat when he's grinning at you from Google Earth are actually the white parking spaces.
That's right.
Of the cars that, you know, the parking spaces that used to be there.
Uh huh. Well, anyway,
when it was used as a parking lot.
It's just one of the many big art. Megan is into big art in quality and quantity and size. That I wanted to lead off with recapturing that moment and that time, because it's still very much alive, as you say, at least in cyberspace and real space. But let's go now to the Big Head Brigade. Cap Grossos, I love that. Papier mâché, costume heads. I just wanted to give it a try. Tell us, what is that all about? I know you're the founder and director, but what is that, the Big Head Brigade?
Well, years ago, a friend of mine emailed me a picture of some Cap Grossos, which are big heads, that you saw in Barcelona.
Yes.
And I fell in love with them, and I got completely obsessed with them. So I actually traveled to Spain and learned how to make these Cap Grossos, a Catalonian name for big head.
Mm-hmm.
And I found some Catalonian, the premier Catalonian folk artist that actually made Cap Grossos, and they taught me how to build them. It was the Ventura and Hosta. And I loved them so much and what they were doing that I had a show in 2013 in Richmond. And with the help of the curator there, Carolyn Wright, she wrote a grant for the National Endowment of the Arts, and we won the grant, and she brought, with my help and this grant, we brought Ventura and Hosta to Virginia, and then in Richmond at the Visual Arts Center, they did for 2 weeks a workshop there teaching artists how to make Cap Grossos, and then I brought them a week later to the University of Virginia, and they taught my students how to make Cap Grossos. Hmm. And after they left, after being here for about a month, all of a sudden I turned around, and I had all these students and all these artists that had all these big heads, and I was like, what are we going to do with them?
Yes. and just so, in case people are wondering, what Megan and I are talking about, Cap Grossos, is spelled C as in cat, hey, APGROSSOS, and it means big heads, I guess, yes?
Yes, exactly. It's a plural for Cap Grossos, which is a big head.
So what did you decide to do, you and your students, with all your big heads?
Well, these are large paper mache heads that are about 24 inches high, maybe about 14 to 16 inches deep and wide. And we basically, they're very lightweight and hollow inside, and you place them over your head, like a full mask. And most of the time, their mouths are open and smiling, and that's what you look out of. You look out of the mouth.
Mm-hmm.
So once we decided we were going to be an artist collective and put all our big heads together, we decided that we were going to perform. Now, none of us are performers. We don't come from that background. We come from a visual arts background.
Mm-hmm.
So we quickly found ourselves in a field that none of us were trained in, which is drama and the arts and the theater arts. But we make do. We do a lot of street performing, which is different than being on a stage.
Sure.
The stage, there's a large separation on the stage between the audience and the performers. And now on the street, that boundary is completely blurred. There is no boundary between the performers and the audience. So we're kind of more comfortable on the street, and we performed quite a few places in the last 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, so you're literally street art. That is, it's so fantastic. And we should mention, tell us about the creature walk or the creature moving creatures.
The festival of the moving creatures. That's when we first started.
Yes.
Doing that, and that was at UVA. They had brought in Stan Winston-Stung.
Yes.
To work with the students to build these very, very large puppets. But they weren't necessarily put in the show. They were doing a lot of foam rubber and things, but they were huge insects. They were like large puppets that took maybe 30 students or more to manipulate these huge monsters. And we were just, at that time, when Ben Burn Hosta had come, and so we participated because we figured that we were creatures too, but we were much smaller. We just threw individual bodies with these big heads on. And that just fit into that. But from there, we've gone lots of different places. Our first event was the Art and Odd Places in Greensboro, North Carolina. And Art and Odd Places is, it's kind of like a street exhibition where they try to put art in places that you don't necessarily expect it to be. So you'd be walking down the street and there'd be a performer doing strange things, like in New York there was a person in a pink Ranger suit walking backwards down 14th Street just looking at the world through a shining spoon. So anyway, there's just strange things like this. They really are not expecting to see art. They try to put art in it, and they had us be there, being performing their events in the first one in Greensboro, North Carolina. Since then, we've done the one that they do in New York City as well, later. But we've also done the Dumbo Arts Festival in Brooklyn, which unfortunately is no longer in existence because of the last one. And just this summer, we went to Prague.
Yes. Tell us about Prague.
But Prague's beautiful. I mean, it's just a romantic, beautiful place. We were asked to be a part of the Tribes exhibition. Now, this is a part of the Prague Quadrennial, which happens every 4 years. It's a kind of a convention for people who design drama, stage, theater, costumes, props, the things of theater that aren't necessarily the direct acting, all of the accoutrements that go around acting. And again, this is not my world. I'm a visual artist, but yet, we were invited to do this. And now the Tribe exhibition, what constitutes a tribe is three members or more that dress the same way. And they had 100 tribes from all over the world come to Prague to participate in this Tribes exhibition. And what you did was you were designated a certain time and day in the 2 week period as the quadrennial event was going on, where you would walk a designated walk through the old town of Prague. It's about an hour and a half walk going down through the subway, up and out, over the St. Charles Bridge, all through the old town. And each tribe member had to do this particular walk.
And did you do this with wearing a big head?
Yes, I did. So we had three of us.
Wow. Is it warm inside or difficult to see?
Yes, it's difficult to see, it's difficult to hear, it's difficult to speak.
I shouldn't laugh, sorry. That's quite a challenge for your art, yes?
Yes, exactly. Our art to perform in, it's quite difficult to sometimes perform in, and it's very difficult when people start asking questions why you're in a big hit, because usually what we do when we perform is we have scouts with us that don't have big heads that can basically answer questions that the audience might have as we're performing. Make sure, you know, no one touches the performers, that kind of thing. And just kind of show us the way around, because it is your visibility is quite limited. And so is your hearing and your speaking.
So how did you get invited to Prague? Who arranged that?
Well, I had a friend who is in theater, who is actually the director of set design in Baltimore in a theater group called Single Carrot. And he actually sent me the application form. I wouldn't have known about it because, again, I'm not in the theater world.
Mm-hmm.
But he said, hey, Megan, this is just for you. You're in the Big Head Brigade. So he sent that. And we ended up actually, I really wanted to go to Prague. And I really wanted to go walk around Prague with the big head on. I mean, nobody wanted to do that. You see?
And he thought of you right away.
So we put in three proposals, you know?
Uh-huh.
Thinking, you know, they're gonna want one of these, you know?
Yes.
They ended up taking all three proposals, which was wonderful.
Wow. Wow.
The hard part was getting there with our big head.
Yes. How do you, I mean, they are, after all, works of art and somewhat fragile, I would think. I mean, I've seen them, so they have to be packed carefully and treated with great respect when traveling. How was that? That's another challenge. How did that go?
Extremely interesting challenge. I had to engineer that.
Mm.
They had limited amount of money, so I couldn't mail them to just mailing one big head one way was going to cost $500.
Wow.
And we had six of them we had to send over. So I had to find an airline that had reasonable rates for extra baggage.
Uh-huh.
I had to make sure that the baggage that they were set in was less than 50 pounds, which is no problem. These are very lightweight heads. They're actually quite sturdy.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to make sure that the packages were no larger than 62 inches if you add the height, weight, the height, width, and depth.
Mm.
So I had to basically make a couple of the boxes that they were put in so they would fit those dimensions perfectly. I couldn't go over or I'd be charged a great amount of money.
Mm.
And that was basically our luggage. So we would, the beacons are hollow, so we put up basically our underwear and our, you know, toothpaste and things, and brushes and whatnot, inside the big head.
Uh-huh.
And that's how we got them to Prague and back again.
Oh, my God, what an adventure. Listen, we're going to take a short break. We will be right back. I'm talking with Megan Marlett, and we are talking about Big Heads, the Big Head Brigade, her artwork that has literally been around the world. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. Alexander Payne is an artist of vision. In Nebraska, the man who helmed Election, Sideways, and The Descendants delivers again. This time with a uniquely artistic comedy. Woody, Bruce Dern, and his family live in small-town Nebraska. They are not exactly high achievers. Woody has drunk away any motivation he ever had and now lives his old age in an adult fog. He receives a publisher's sweepstakes announcement implying that he has won $1 million. Woody has let his family down all his life, so he decides to go claim the prize in order to leave something of value to his sons. The film is Woody's journey to accept his fortune. His son David, slogging through life himself, is played by Will Forte. Knowing the prize can't possibly be real, David decides to drive to Lincoln with his dad. Just maybe through this crazy, quixotic journey, the enigma that is his father might be unraveled. Filmed in black and white, Nebraska emerges from an effectively contrived, depressingly gray palette. Its deadpan delivery and simple humor mix with a confident sentimentality. It takes brilliance to realize the power that such contrasts can provide. Hugely entertaining and singularly artistic brilliance. Nebraska, not in theaters. Discovery through rental.
Welcome back to the Reasonable Voices Talk Radio Show. Again, my guest today is artist Megan Marlette, and who is the director, founder, and director of the Big Head Brigade LLC, an artist's collective that makes and exhibits capgrossos, capgrossos, papier mâché. We have been talking about Megan's and her Big Head art, taking part in Prague's exhibit and design production that happens every 4 years, I believe you said. But also, yes, but also how to get the art there, and that was a story in itself. But let's get back to America for a bit, and because there are two things we definitely want to cover. One is a fundraiser that Big Head Brigade is involved in, but before that, let's talk about Halloween. I know you're not just a one-year artistic function, but tell us what you have planned for Halloween and the Big Head art this year, 2015.
Okay, well, I actually, my husband and I live in Orange, Virginia, which is about 28 miles northeast of Charlottesville. And it's a small town, and it's a wonderful place to live. Mm. And, you know, the thing that's wonderful about a small town is when you don't know what you're doing with your life, everybody else does. So they all know I'm in my studio making these big heads, and of course they want me to display them in Orange, and I want to do that too.
Yes.
for my community. So every year they have an annual Halloween festival. Mm-hmm. Where they close down Main Street, and our Main Street is really cute, and they give out candy and things to the kids. This year it will be the day before Halloween. It will be on a Friday, October 30th, mm-hmm. from 4 o'clock to 6 o'clock. When we're a small little town in the middle of a small county that's very rural, and when you have so much rural space, there's really no place as a kid to go trick-or-treating because your neighbors are so far away.
Yes.
Most of the people bring them into town.
Huh.
And so we get quite a lot of children on Halloween. And so the Downtown Alliance, the Orange Downtown Alliance, which is a Main Street organization, started this annual festival, and they've asked the Big Head Brigade to perform in it. And we are, I'm asking, you know, a lot of the Big Head Brigade members, as well as extended family and friends,
mm-hmm.
to all help out. Everyone's the big volunteer kind of event right now, just to provide an alternative to the children who are coming, something more than just getting sweets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here they'll get eye candy as well, because the Big Head Brigade will be going up and down the streets. We plan on, in the 2 hours that the event goes on, about every 15 minutes send out a Big Head act.
Mm-hmm.
We've got quite a few volunteers. We have about 15 volunteers to help us. Yeah, so we've got everything from horses, little horses being running up and down, some witches that are going to be horses tap dancing, to we have a three-headed creature, and we have the devil and the angel will battle on the streets.
Mm.
We have the queen will make an appearance, her hiney, the queen and her corgis.
Uh-huh.
She loves corgis, so that they will make an appearance. For the first time, I'm going to have a very large vintage Big Head that I've been restoring, that's from the 1930s,
huh.
An Italian Big Head, which is bigger than the heads that I made.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll actually have an armature, and he should be probably a good 8 feet tall.
Wow.
and he'll make an appearance for the first time. And then near the end will be Thomas Jefferson himself. We have a 10-foot-high Thomas Jefferson, who was actually built not by me, but by Ventura and Hosta when they came and did their workshops. They're such generous people that they just didn't come and, you know, teach us how to make caprosos. They actually built us a giant. Now, the giants go hand in hand with the big heads in Spain. The giants are usually 10 to 12 feet high, and they have somewhat, you can imagine, they wear a skirt, and under the skirt is like a, you can imagine like a large bar stool, a kind of structure where the person gets underneath that structure, underneath the skirt, and holds the giant up on their shoulders.
Oh.
And usually the skirt has a screen in it so they can see out. But the giant is a full body figure, where the big heads are just the head.
So you have a giant Thomas Jefferson.
We have a giant Thomas Jefferson that Ventura and Hosta from Spain made just for us. And he's about 10 feet high.
Wow. Well, that's not too much taller than he was, actually. 4 feet, maybe. but getting back to the big heads and Halloween, you have big heads that are mice. I know I've seen that. Dogs.
Oh, yes. Dogs.
Rappers.
What?
Rappers.
Oh, rappers. Exactly. I forgot about the rappers. That's Danielle. Danielle Lolan is one of my students, and her favorite thing is she's no longer a student, she's an alumni now, but she's a Big Head Brigade member. She's one of our core members, and she's very active in the Big Head Brigade, and one of her favorite things to make are rappers.
Mm-hmm.
She loves hip-hop music, and her first rapper that she made was Trinidad Jones. And then just last year she made Drake. So she gets into these things, you see, her and her friends, and they dance all up and down. we usually play, you know, some sort of interesting rap music while they're dancing. Yeah.
Excellent. And what caught my eye in doing the research for today's show, you also have big heads of art critics.
Yes, the critics at large.
Yes.
that's their names. And they are actually based on true critics. They're a couple, Jerry Saltz and Roberta Smith. Roberta Smith writes for the New York Times, and Jerry Saltz writes for the New York Magazine. Mm-hmm. They are married. They're both very famous art critics.
Yes.
And very well known in New York. And when we go to New York, we bring them, and we basically bomb. When we were in Art and Art Places in New York last year, this time last year, October, we went to very many, several large art openings in Chelsea at the galleries, and it was quite a Disney scene, because, you know, we would walk into these gallery openings, be full of people, and, you know, we had these big heads on us, Jerry and Roberta, and not only that, we had clipboards. There's clipboards and very big pencils, these huge big red pencils. And we'd go around and, you know, you can't talk too much in a big head, but we would pantomime, you know, our criticism. And then in our pockets were little merit badges that you would, little stickers that you would give to a, you know, first grader who did a good job on the paper. And we would give those to the artists. We'd always find out who the artist was at the opening and make sure they got a merit sticker, you know, for doing, you know, a good job, or,
excellent,
you know.
Excellent. Tell us, I know the city of Orange is rather small, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's in Orange County, Virginia, yes?
The
city of Orange is in Orange County, Virginia. You said it was about, I think, 28 miles northeast of Charlottesville. Where is it in relationship to Fredericksburg, just to triangulate for folks who might want to come on Friday, October 30th, 4 to 6?
It's actually, it would be west of Fredericksburg.
Okay.
It's actually the same distance. It's like we're right in between Fredericksburg and Charlottesville. It's about 28 miles, then further east. If you were to come from Charlottesville and hit Orange and then keep going east, you'd hit Fredericksburg. So they're both about 28 miles from the center of Orange.
Well, I would say to all ladies and gentlemen and your children, it would be a unique Halloween celebration a day before Halloween, so they still get to go trick-or-treat when they're back home. But certainly something to see on Main Street, Orange, Virginia, on Friday, October 30th. Now we want to turn, with the time we have left, into art, like everything else, needs money to survive. And your organization, the Big Head Brigade, is not a 501c standing, but you're all volunteers, and you're trying to raise $6,000 to do what? I find this project especially exciting.
Yes, you're right. We're not going to get rich wearing a big head.
Exactly.
yes, and we are not a 501c yet. We aren't getting paid for what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
What I would like to do for my community in Orange is it is the home of James and Dolly Madison.
Yes.
Montclair's down the street, it's only 4 miles from the town of Orange. And since we have a 10-foot Jefferson that is a giant, I would like to build a giant Dolly and a giant James Madison for my community that they can use at various events. In the tradition of the Spanish, usually the big heads are kind of comical satire people.
Mm-hmm.
But the giants, when they make a giant, it's usually a revered person from their community, from their history. These giants are sincere, kind of serious portrayals of important people in their history.
Mm-hmm.
So with that in mind, that I would like, and usually they're pairs, they're usually male, female, king, queen, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to build, you know, this for my hometown. Now, it takes money to build it, and it's not all money that's going in my pocket by any means. The price that I'm asking is $3,000 for each of these, which is basically just going to take care of the expenses of having them built. $1,000 of it would go just to build, to sewing their clothing. You're talking about a 10-foot, 12-foot high body that needs period clothing.
Mm.
So it needs, you know, the fabric needs to be bought. It needs to be, they both need to be outfitted in period clothing, long skirts, capes, jackets, you know, turbans for Dolly's head, that kind of thing. Takes a lot of yardage, takes a lot of skill. I'm not the seamstress here. I'd have to hire that out. Then the other $1,000 would actually go for the structure underneath it, the body, the armature, the kind of like I was talking about, a step stool, ladder kind of structure underneath it that's going to actually hold the body up. It'd be another $1,000 to have a craftsman, and again, that's not going to be me, build that thing lightweight enough and strong enough that it will hold these bodies up. The last $1,000, the cost of this other $1,000, would then go into actually making the paper mache heads and arms and body structure of these giants, and that would be done through my studio, and that money would go towards the fabrication materials, which would be, you know, I have to start these things with clay, and from clay, then I make a plaster cast, then I get a special expenses paper. It's not your paper mache that you usually do at school, in high school. It's not the same kind of paper mache. It's a cast paper mache made from an archival, pulpy kind of thick paper. That also would go towards my overhead in my studio, as well as I often have an assistant. I pay my assistant $10 an hour, you know, so there's that cost involved in that. So basically what I'm hoping to do at this Halloween event is sell T-shirts. We're going to have some Big Head Brigade T-shirts with our logo on it. And hopefully that will help raise some of the money. And, you know, I'll have a fishbowl out there with the drawing of my rendition of what I hope to make in terms of Dolly and James. And, you know, hopefully the people will chip in. I'm hoping that they'll, because it's a gift to the community, I'm hoping the community will rally together to somehow or other chip in to make this happen. Then they won't, you know, they'll not have these huge things. We can store them, you know, we can store them at the local art center or at the local city hall. They don't have to be, they don't belong to the community. And then they could be used, you know, for the Christmas parade that they always have, the firemen's parade at the beginning of the summer that they always have, any event that, you know, they want to bring these two big giants out and have them dance and swirl in the streets like they do in Spain. That'd be, I think, a wonderful gift.
I think so, too. And just so, again, we're talking about being in Orange, Virginia, on Friday, October 30th, between 4 and 6, a great, unique, international, if you will, even, a celebration of Halloween. But in addition to, Megan, in addition to the fishbowl out in front of the Halloween event, is there a place people can send money or at least visit a website so they know your work and can see an example of Big Jefferson so they get some idea?
Yes,
tell us.
Yes. The Big Head Brigade has its own website, and people can access that through www.bigheadbrigade.com. And again, brigade is spelled B-R-I-G-A-D-E. And there on the website, there's a place where they can contact me.
Okay. Is there a donate button?
No, I haven't gotten that sophisticated.
Well, and I don't know if there are rules if you're not a 501c about donate buttons, but I don't know. At least people can see your work and they can contact you and get more information about Halloween and the Big Head Brigade. It has been
that
an absolute,
wonderful.
Yeah, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, Megan. It always is. It's and amazingly creative. I've had the good fortune of actually seeing Megan's work up close and personal, but not only in the parking lot in Charlottesville, but on hanging on the walls of some impressive exhibits. So I wish you as you're quite welcome, and you certainly earned it. And I appreciate all that you do for the art world, and of course all those events in my favorite city, New York, and around in Brooklyn and so forth. She's been everywhere. Visit her, www.brigade. You give it to us, Megan. It makes it
Big Head Brigade.
BigHeadBrigade.com. Okay. Thank you, Megan, for being on the show. We wish you all the very best. We'll see you. Bye now.
Thank you, Michelle. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Stay with us as we'll be right back with a final comment from The Reasonable Voice.
Child of 14 would her own life because of bullying.
I walked into that bedroom. I knew she was dead.
It hurts even more sometimes. You think that something could have done to prevent it, but they did.
Her life was threatened.
What people frequently don't understand is they think they have to mean the threat. They think they have, if they say, I'm going to shoot you, they think in order to be guilty, you have to have an intention to go out and get the gun and shoot them. That's not the case.
In my legal opinion, the charges should have been first-degree murder based on a commission of crime, which was uttering threats.
Though people say, you know, sticks and stones can break my bones, but names will never hurt me, they sure hurt a couple of people, and a lot of people. And
when people were bullying you, or when you saw people bullying other people, what did you do? It's never easy to stand up for what's right, but it's easier to stand up for what's right when you don't know the person who's being the tormentor.
Just a month before that, we came close to losing our son for the same reason.
Bullying is always cold-blooded and intentional. It's a child who is intentionally trying to cause another child pain.
Schools must have to identify bullying as being able to occur in school and out of school.
The thing in the writing that just really got to me was, I just want to die, 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 over and over and over and over and over down the page.
Nothing would have changed if Don didn't die. I believe to this day it would still be the way it was. Now it's different and girls get charged.
Hello, I'm Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, thanking you for joining us and becoming one of the reasonable voices heard round the world. From Pope to Putin, the answer is simple. No labels. While still basking in the warmth of climate change a la Pope Francis I, Vladimir winterizes UN with Cold War Arctic race, giving the U.S. the cold shoulder on secret Iraq deal. Thus, frostbitten, the President and the Putin toast with chilled smiles to who's got the biggest Middle East bloc for war and a piece of the action. What labels do we adhere? Great minds think alike, Pope Francis? Boehner prayerfully bowing out in aura of papal wake, having washed his hands of a middle class sacrificed on the altar of a tea-stained minimum wage? Chinese blow by with emissions talk in the wind? Or not knowing why Putin dropped in? It's not the numbers flowing from Syria, but the labels. Lebanon, Afghanistan, and OMG, Africa. All we like Trump sheep going astray, labeling our nation with, don't give me your tired old criminals yearning to do drug deals and rape those labeled with victim mentality? We'll never know how much like Pope Francis we can be unless we let go of labels that allow us to deny, to ignore, and to stigmatize our fellow human beings. If only we could be as concerned for mother and child after birth as some portend before labor labels them. How do we label Americans living in the 24 states refusing to provide Medicaid extension for their citizens who most need affordable health care? Or the 5 million American families living with Alzheimer's disease? Or the 250 million children around the world who cannot read or write? Or the geographical location and poverty that prevents children, especially girls, from being educated? The whirlwind visit of Pope Francis I wasn't to be made in America with the People's Pope label. He came to touch our hearts and open our minds so we see the injustice of climate change, war, ignorance, and yes, the shame of sexual child abuse. He came so we could see beyond America to global citizenship.
Like Pope Francis I, climate change, the justice of gender equality, and the depletion of the Earth's resources cannot wait for our grandchildren. These forces already demand our attention. While we follow media-directed email woman hunt, we're missing Wall Street empire building, why space travel and water are being privatized, the urgency of American cities now bone dry or flooding repeatedly. Labeling blinds us to a deeper reality. Character and personality, like climate change and global warming, are not the same thing. While we memorize and are mesmerized over labels for storms, we fail to ask on what and to whom does corporatism turn when the wells run dry. So many claim God whispers discrimination in their ear, but only labeled schizophrenics are proclaimed demons every time gun violence prevails over reason. Core values, like labels, are century-old lessons now incorporated by powerful wealthy lecturers to manipulate less affluent, debt-ridden students of life yearning to be in tune with the harmony of inclusiveness. Labeling each other crazies leaves us vulnerable to the life-taking greed of a Martin Scirelli. But cheering a pope for reminding us that we labeled ourselves the land of the free and the home of the brave challenges us to open our hearts and borders, finally leaving no child behind to a languageless victim existence. To quote a pope and paraphrase another, education forms the common mind. Just as the twig is bent, the tree's inclined. Quoting Pope Francis, society endures when it seeks as a vocation to satisfy common needs by stimulating the growth of all its members, especially those in situations of greater vulnerability or risk. Legislative activity is always based on care for the people. To this you have been invited, called, and convened by those who elected you. Unquote. Voting labels us climate justice, for stewards we are, responsible for Earth and all upon it. Join us. Become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world. Thank you.
Thank you for continuing to listen to, support, and share the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio with family and friends, especially online. We enjoy hearing from you, and in response, yes, we are now accepting new company and business advertisers and welcoming organizations seeking to be one of our sponsors. So please do continue to email us at thereasonablevoice@gmail.com. However, if you prefer to simply make a donation, your donations are greatly appreciated and can be made through PayPal by clicking on the donate button found at the top of the homepage of The Reasonable Voice. Website.
Thank you for joining us today to make every day as reasonable as possible. We hope you will download and share our downloadable podcasts. I'm Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, hoping you will become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world.